Hey, this is Walter, and this is Face the Comic Book Nation with a touch of video games. Oh, let's get the big question out of the way. No, I don't have any comic books to review because I haven't been in one place long enough to find a comic book shop. And where I'm currently at in Sulphur Springs, Texas, I'm 95% sure there's not any comic book shops close by, so on that. But I will address some news that would probably also be discussed on Geek Entertainment in depth with Thomas DJ and Zachary Joyner. It's the big announcement from Marvel that they're going to quote, Marvel Now, which is sort of like DCNU. So what does this mean? Be honest with you, I don't know. I've given up on trying to comprehend the thinking that is going on with DC and Marvel. What bothers me the most is they got some really talented writers there. And I mean, you got your Gail Simones, you got your Hickmans, and you got your Palmiotis, Amanda Connors, your Brian Bendises, and so on and so forth. Everybody has opinion about who their favorite writers are, so on and so forth. I don't think the companies get it. I really, 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 really don't. Okay, they have gone event after event after event. Currently, as I'm speaking now, there's an event going on, Avengers versus X-Men in the Marvel Universe. DC's not doing an event. They have Flashpoint. They have to get people familiar with the whole universe again, and answer the questions that they keep getting bombarded with. Where's this character? Where's that character? So on and so forth. So they really can't do an event right this second. I'm pretty sure by this time next year there will be an event happening in the DCU because God knows they can't do one. Go 2 years without doing an event. DC claims they have a 5-year plan. This is what annoys me. If they had a 5-year plan, why didn't they include everybody onto this 5-year plan? It was a select few who made this plan. The select few being Don DiDio, Jim Lee, and Geoff Johns. Wouldn't having all the creators, all the writers come together and bounce ideas off each other, give their opinions, weigh in on the subject, so on and so forth, and go with that plan? I mean, granted, we may not have the DCEU, but still, which, in my personal opinion, wouldn't be a bad thing, honestly. I know there's a lot of you who are listening to me right now that enjoy the DCEU. I personally find it boring. Incredibly, incredibly boring and sexist and just amazes me that people have latched on to this thing like, oh, this is great, this is great. No, not really. I hate to tell you, it's been done before. It lasts for about a year or two, then it fades off until the next big gimmick happens. Okay, we had a renaissance with the Marvel Universe with the writers where they were putting out fantastic story after fantastic story. Okay. DC suffered underneath that because they don't have really fantastic writers other than a select few. I can think of maybe five. And Brian Azzarello is not among them. Nor is Judd Winnick. He's not among them. They have one or two arcs that are really good and impressive, but on the whole of the work, they're average at best. I mean, Gail Simone, who's my favorite DC writer, okay. No, nothing against anybody else who works at DC, but she understands what's important. The relationship between her and her fans, her and her character's fans, it's very important to Gail. But no one else gets that, really. I really don't think they comprehend what, and I'm presuming a lot by while I'm speaking by Gail Simone's thinking that she gets what the fans see. They're emotionally invested into these characters, so in turn, she speaks to them, whether it be privately or on her message board, that bear with her, everything's going to be okay, trust her. If she screws up, she screws up. She knows it, okay? There's no harm in taking a risk, and sometimes taking that risk works out fantastically, or it fails horribly. So, but that's the point of taking a risk. So what does DC New Universe mean to me? Playing it safe. There is no risk here, people. There is no risk. All they did was reboot the universe to back to 1970 or 1980. I give you 1980. Who can? Why? Is it 1980? Can people, were the characters and the stories there relatable? Their situations that were going through relatable to re were they drawing more readers in? No. As someone who was part of the 1980s, part of the big boom and bust of the comics of the 90s, why relive it? This is basically what happened in the 1980s, okay? The 1980s were filled with really good stories, okay? You have writers like Peter David, you have your Chris Claremont on X-Men, John Byrne on Superman, and they were telling fantastic stories. They weren't sitting there. I mean, yeah, John Byrne rebooted Superman without really rebooting Superman. And of course, I'm recording, and the damn dog's hacking again. I think that little red button on this thing is the cough for the dog, for signal for the dog to start coughing. You done? You done? No, I guess not. Can you give it a rest? Any day now. Purr. Get it all out of your system now, please. Jesus. And this is what bothers me the most about Marvel and DC. They just don't get it. They think that people want gimmicks. They want Flash. They want big events. And nothing will ever be the same after this. Well, that's not it. You boil it down to the brass tacks. Why are people not buying comics? The stories aren't that good. They're not compelling. You tell a good story, you'll get readers. What they don't get, they haven't been telling good stories. They've been doing events, they've been doing gimmicks, they've been doing controversy, but they haven't been telling good stories. If you go back to one of my Face the Comic Book Nations about Shock and Awe, where I talked about Mark Millar, he, as much as I don't like his work, I really don't like Mark Millar. He does take risks, but it's the same risk over again. Okay, the problem I have with the writers that currently are on the vast majority of the major titles in both companies is that they are playing it safe. They're not trying to take risks. Point, case in point. One More Day. Okay, there's an article by somebody that moderates the message board, Mr. Metz, saying that basically the marriage was rushed and all that stuff. Technically, he's correct. The marriage was rushed. It was done at the last minute. But the story, that result that came out of that rushed situation where one day they walked into work and say, oh, now we got Mary Jane and Peter getting married in the comic strip, so we want to marry in the comic book so they match up, so on and so forth. The stories that came out of that rushed situation were incredible. They were believable. They made sense, in my opinion. I still firmly believe that Amazing Spider-Man Annual 21 was the best comic book of the 80s. There was no real major planning involved. It was people drawing on their own personal experiences, their doubts about getting married and all that. It was conveyed beautifully in Amazing 21. Amazing Annual 21. It was a true masterpiece. What happened? They didn't have time to overthink it. They had to get the books done, had to get it out on time so it will match up when they get married in the dailies. I mean, sure, they could have delayed the dailies, whatever the situation, but they didn't do it. They didn't think about it. They just wrote a story. And I don't think what the writers are doing. They're, with notable exceptions, they're not writing stories. They're writing events. They're writing gimmicks. They're writing situations just for the pure, simple fact, let me see if I can shock you. Just write a story. Don't think about it. Don't overanalyze it. Don't sit there and go, how can I call attention to this book? Just write the story. Don't think about it. Don't sit there and overanalyze it. Don't say, oh, I gotta do something here to call attention to this character. If you write a good story, people will come to the book and buy it. Word does get around. Walking Dead, it was word of mouth. It wasn't no big hubbub. It's not even a Marvel or DC book. It's purely independent. What does that tell you? A lot of books that people are talking about by word of mouth are independent. They don't talk about Marvel or DC by word of mouth. Marvel and DC try to generate their own news. Oh, we got an Amazing Spider-Man 700. This awesome thing is going to happen. How about Amazing Spider-Man 700? We tell a fantastic Spider-Man story. Don't worry about it. It's going to change how everything is going to happen from here on out. Massive changes are coming. You know, if you have to announce the change, you're going to make a major change, or if you're announcing that someone dies in this book, then you're not doing your job right. We want to be surprised. Don't tell us someone's going to die in the book. Let us find out. That was the great thing from the 70s, basically through the vast majority of the 90s. We were surprised when we picked up the book. With pre-internet, the only way you found out how something happened in the book, you picked it up and read it. It was spread by word of mouth. That's what happened. Comic book readers talk to each other. They say, what's a good book? What you reading? Why are you reading that one? Oh, that's what's going on? Really? And you go buy it. Senator. Fantastic story. I'm pretty sure Peter David didn't overanalyze that sucker. He just wrote a book or story arc that was probably not meant to have resonated so strongly with the readers or be considered a classic story now. He just wanted to tell a simple murder mystery. And he did a fantastic job. Now, other problems, I'm not going to call them editorial mandates, but I would say too much editorial interference. How about that? Okay. Oh, you can't do that because of it's going to ruin the character. Not to you. I'm going to go use the Spider-Man's marriage for example. Everybody said that it aged Peter. It hampered the ability to tell the stories that the way they were before. I was there, literally in the comic book shop, when it was announced that Peter and Mary Jane were getting married. The vast majority of comic book readers at that time were thrilled. We didn't know about this daily strip and all this other stuff. I mean, we were excited because it hasn't been done before. At that point, Mary Jane and Peter were almost to the point of being going back to boyfriend and girlfriend. Okay, but that's been done before. We needed something different. As readers, I'm not talking about the book companies. I'm talking about the readers. We needed something different. We needed something to say, this happened in our time. It happened when I was neck deep in comic book collecting, nerding up to the 10th degree. That's what made me focus so hard on the comic books. It was the Spider marriage. And it came, even though writers bitched and moaned, whiny little fanboys they became. Oh, I can't write the Spider-Man story the way it was in the 70s, 80s. Good. We, as readers, were tired of it. We were tired of the same old situations in Peter Parker's personal life. It got freaking boring. I mean, I'm sure right now people are reading Amazing Spider-Man and going, oh, it's not like that anymore. Tell me one thing that's changed, but it's different. I mean, yeah, you could say about the villains and stuff, but we're talking about Peter's personal life. He got a girlfriend. He broke up because he was Spider-Man. Rinse and repeat. He gets a girlfriend, he breaks up because he's Spider-Man. He gets a girlfriend, he breaks up because he's Spider-Man. He gets a girlfriend, he breaks up because he's Spider-Man. He gets a girlfriend because he's Spider-Man, he breaks him up because he's Peter Parker. You talk about the Parker luck. I mean, how many times do you have to read that story to get the gist? That, how many times can you tell that story before it becomes redundant? It's like, kill Aunt May. I've been a big supporter of killing that old broad. She's not interesting. She adds nothing new to the story. She died once. Fantastic send off. It made me cry. Without a shame, a story that had emotional impact and depth to it. She should have stayed dead. Granted, when she was brought back and made aware of who Peter was, Spider-Man, it added depth to that character. It made her readable, relatable. You liked Aunt May. Right now, I don't like Aunt May. I want her to die. I don't give a shit she's not in the book. I just want her to die because I really don't like her. She adds nothing of value to the story. Oh, she's married to J. Jonah Jameson's father. So, it's not like the first time that she's been married to somebody or had a boyfriend. I mean, hell. She had as many boyfriends as Peter has had girlfriends. It was the same fucking story over and over. She gets a boyfriend. He dies or breaks up. He dies because he's in Spider-Man. Blah, 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 blah. Freaking blah. How many times can you tell that story before it becomes redundant? Now, Spider-Man was married for 20 years. About the same length as the Superman marriage. Well, a little bit longer than a Superman marriage. The main hurdle in both cases of the marriages was that whiny fanboys became the writers of those books. I'm not saying Dan Slott's a whiny fanboy, so don't try to construe this as I'm saying Dan Slott's a whiny fanboy. But I'm talking about all those writers during that time. Yes, I could toss in a whole bunch of names in there, but I'm not going to call any single writer out for it. It was just a simple fact being they needed to do what we've been told as readers, as people who are upset about One More Day. Get over it and move on. I find it very hypocritical on any Marvel employee telling a reader to get over it and move on when they couldn't do it themselves. Is Dan Slott's run better because of the marriage being removed? No. Not really. I mean, to be honest with you, every story that Dan Slott has told since he became the lead writer of Amazing Spider-Man can be told with the marriage. Okay. I have no objection with them getting rid of the marriage. I have objections of how they got rid of it. It was incredibly stupid. It was incredibly stupid. It was a horrible story. It should be reversed. I'm not saying the marriage should come back, but the whole One More Day fiasco needs to be addressed and taken care of in a permanent fashion where the marriage did exist, but Peter and Mary Jane are no longer together. They could do it if they choose to. I'm not saying it's going to be a fantastic story. I'm not saying it's a wonderful story, but it would start the healing at the actual healing process, because that was a horrendous story that has left a big gaping scar on that character. Okay, the Superman marriage. My problem with the removal. I don't have a problem with them removing the Superman marriage. Okay. My problem is the last page of Action Comics, not Action Comics, it was Superman 1, where Clark Kent goes to Lois Lane's apartment and she has a guy there that's coming out of the bedroom pretty much after they got done having sex. So pretty much after every one of these retcons that we get rid of a marriage, the woman becomes a slut. Because they did the same thing with Mary Jane. In the, I believe it was the Paper Doll story, and the when it was under the title, the corner tag of Brand New Day. It's why? You know, really, why do you have to portray the women as sluts? Well, they can pretty much fuck anybody what they want now. We're gonna show it to you, so here, take it. Take it on, take it on, take it deep into your system that they can fuck anybody they want to. Seriously? Really? That's what you want to convey, present to us, that Lois Lane and Mary Jane can fuck anybody they want to now? Is that the whole message that you want to send to us? Really? That's the best that you could come up with. How about if you show that Lois Lane is a workaholic, doesn't have time for a relationship, she's career driven, and that she's in charge of the Daily Planet now, blah, blah, blah. You could have gone a different way. She doesn't have time for a relationship because she's concentrating on her career. She's a career woman, she's a workaholic. You could have gone that route. No, we have to show her as a whore. Because she has boobs. She has boobs and a vagina, so she has to be a whore. Same thing with Mary Jane. You could have shown her concentrating on her acting career, that she's driven to succeed in Hollywood. She doesn't have time to have a relationship with anybody, but no, we have to show her shacking up with some guy, so because she has boobs and a vagina, and she's a whore. And somewhere, somewhere right now, Dan DiDio and Joe Quesada are sitting there going, "They're whores! They're whores! Lois Lane and Mary Jane are whores!" Seriously, I mean, Dan DiDio and Joe Quesada are 7-year-old boys in men's bodies when it comes to these female characters. You think of over the last 20 years, actually the last 15 years of their reign as the head honchos of DC and Marvel, how well have female characters been treated? How many female characters have been shown being either raped or sexually abused as a child? And that's the reason why they became heroes. How many of them have then been killed? How many have been raped by supervillains? How many of them have been shoved into the background because they I don't know what to do with them. Let's put them over there. There's been few notable exceptions. Birds of Prey. Gail Simone's Wonder Woman. Gail Simone's Batgirl. Stephanie Brown's Batgirl. Miss Marvel. That's pretty much it. Everybody else, they've been literally creatively fucked over by the vast majority of these companies just due to the fact they don't have confidence in their female characters. It shows a lack of the ability to rise to the challenge. To say, these characters have value. We're going to show you why they have value. First, we got to clean up quite a bit of the fuck-ups we have done with them, but bear with us. We could get that done in about six issues. We're going to tell fantastic stories that are going to clear out the mess. We're going to let the writer decide how to clear out the mess and get the hell out of his way and go to town. As long as you don't interfere with the core elements of that character, just go ahead and go to town with it. But what do I think about Marvel now? They're saying they're not rebooting the universe, but they're making changes to certain aspects of the universe. It sounds like a fucking reboot. I'm sorry. I hate when they say it's not a reboot. Yeah, it is. It's not a retcon. Yes, it is. Because every time they say that, yes, it is. They won't be renumbering stuff that they weren't going to reconstruct. If they weren't going to change continuity. Let's put it that way. I mean, continuity in these two companies are a joke now. Well, continuity hinders a character. No, let's clear up the confusion about that, okay? This is what continuity means to me. It is the basic. You can pick up Amazing Fantasy 15 to the current issue of Spider-Man and see a flow of stories that branched out to these other stories. You could do the same with the personal relationships. Okay? In the meantime, you can take those branches and you go branch out even more. You can create new characters off of these other elements in these other stories. That's what continuity does. It's not a hindrance. It's a tool to be used to help you tell stories. Superman was fighting Lex Luthor, but unbeknownst to him during their battle where a truck knocks over and an explosion happens where radioactive material got into a baby bottle creating a new hero or something, you know? I mean, a new supervillain was created during a battle between Batman and the Joker where thunderbolts come out of his armpits and kills people. You know, during You know, you got to set up, you got continuity sets up a lot of stuff. You know, where you can see, oh, this Maximum Closure. It was an awful story of, but this one section here, I can do something with it and make something fantastic out of Green Lantern Reborn. I really don't have to say any more than that. Geoff Johns did a wonderful way of bringing back Hal Jordan without trashing the legacy of Kyle Reiner and bringing back the leg. But since then, I really think he needs to stop writing that character and move on to other things, because damn, he's been on the book way too long. His love for that character has affected pretty much everything that's followed in DC, which has now become a bloody hindrance. Okay, he just needs to get away from the Green Lantern character for an extended period of time and let someone else be the voice of Green Lantern. Okay, we need a different voice on a lot of these characters. Ultimate Spider-Man, the same thing. As much as I love Brian Bendis on Ultimate Spider-Man, I think his work has been a steady quality. I do think it's time for a change. It's time for him to hand the reins over to somebody else to go, here you go. It's your turn. I did all I could do for you. If you want to bring Peter Parker back, bring Peter Parker back. But it's your book now. Go for it. And move on to something else, you know. There's a lot of changes are happening here. DC, especially with DC, they're rotating creative teams left and right over these other books because their sales have dropped. They're pretty much going back to the numbers that they were before Flashpoint. Batman's the only constant, and he's got like 55 fucking books. Superman has wind down to basically to where he was before because it's boring. The only one that has held up to the numbers they could without the least minimum drop is Batgirl. Maybe that should tell you something. Suicide Squad, that book's going to be canceled. It is horrendous. It's horrendous. I really wish the Red Hood and Buddies would be canceled because that book's horrendous. Glad to see Judd winning gets off the Catgirl because, God, I couldn't take any more of that. That's it for my little rant on the comic book. The little touch of the video games. Okay, Mass Effect 3 has come out with an extended cut. I haven't played it myself. Just due to the fact I haven't had time, nor do I really have an inclination to play it because the endings are horrendous. They're just the worst case of selfish writing to please the creator and not the consumer that I've ever seen in my life. But I have watched the videos on YouTube of the end of the quote unquote extended ending. If they would have done that with the game, I wouldn't have as big as a problem as I do right now. I mean, they should have done that when the game was released. Now it comes off as, well, I said before that the game came out like it wasn't complete. This pretty much proves that the point was the game was rushed out incomplete. You bought an incomplete game. It was horrendous. It still is horrendous, in my personal opinion. Because you do have a refuse option when you're talking to the Reaper kid, where they basically said, fuck you. You know? That's. I don't think that Mark Waters or Casey Anthony, I don't know. Or Casey Waters and Mark Anthony, having a clue to how to end a story in such a way that the reader, the player, or this, or a reader, you can say, comes away with a satisfying feeling that you took part of an epic adventure. Mass Effect ends on a major league whimper. There is no major element of no major feeling of victory. That's what's really missing here in all the endings, is a sense of victory. You play all three games, you get emotionally invested, you get to the end, and you come away going, that's it? That's it? Really? That's your, my sense of victory here is that? But it did fix a lot of things, okay? It did explain why the Normandy took off. They didn't show it blowing up and being stranded on a planet anymore, which, thank God, because that was moronic. The Reaper kid is still in there. I hate that fucking kid. And I can't shoot him no more. Apparently, if I shoot him, he goes like, Soviet, you all die. Blah, 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 blah. I feel Liara is way too fucking important in that game. Just so many things that after playing Mass Effect 3, I walked away with a bad taste in my mouth for that one particular game. I love 1 and 2. 1 and 2 are masterpieces in my work. That those two, I would say, are two works of art. 3, 4, 90% of that game is good. It's great. It's wonderful. The rest of it, the side quests and all that stuff, it's below average. It's even with the extended cut, it's still below average. It's nothing that would highly our own knowing the you buy that game on when it's at on the previous play shelf, because that's all it's worth. It's not worth spending $60 on. It's worth spending $20 on, to be honest with you. It's not worth the full price of a mission. other stories, and these all ties together. That's the reason why I brought video games. The digital formatting. EA announced this week that they're going to go all digital. That there will be no hard copies, which I think is a tremendous mistake. DC and Marvel are moving that way. Once again, I feel that's a tremendous mistake. Okay, if anybody who has done any kind of sales job, okay, I've done sales. The greatest sense of ownership is literally having something in your hands. The product itself in your hands. That gives you a sense of ownership. Sense of, I need to read this. I have paid money for this. I own this. I need to use it. If you don't have that sense of ownership, at all. Pardon me. I just got home from work. I'm sorry to yawn. You don't get that sense of ownership with a digital copy of a comic book. You don't get a sense of ownership with a download video game, which that means, quite frankly, you're going to be limited to the amount of games you can have because of the ability of a hard drive. You do not want to use Origin. There's too many freaking horror stories about that. I mean, God, from what I understand, Origin is about it's horrendous as far as downloading games and everything else, and they're overpriced on top of everything else. Put it this way, you can go and probably buy Mass Effect, a new copy of Mass Effect at Walmart for $20 or less. You can probably find it for $5. Or you can pay $60 on Origin to get Mass Effect 1, not 2. Or 3. Mass Effect 1 for $60. That's the reason why they're doing this. They want you to pay full price for the games for an extended period of time. So, like, let's say they put out a new role-playing game. It's a big hit, okay? Then, for about a year and a half, it goes down in price to a reasonable sum. Let's just say, sake of argument, $25. I think that's about as low as they were willing to go. Would be willing to go on that. Then they come out with the sequel. Well, what they're going to do is going to jack up that price back to full price. You buy the sequel, then they as they both go down, they make another signal to jack up all three prices, so you'd be forced to pay full price constantly because you're not going to have a hard copy in your hand. You can't go to GameStop or all these other places that sell previous owned video games because there is no hard copy. I think it's a big mistake. With comic books, it's incredibly... Yeah, you could get back issues digitally, but you know what? I still want to be able to feel the pages in my hand. I want to turn the pages. I love opening up a comic book. You do get a whiff of that new comic book smell. You can't beat it, you know? It's just one of those things where there is so many sensory things going. The touch of the paper, the visual of the colors on the page, the sensation of turning, the smell of the paper. It's a sensory experience when you read a comic book, for me anyway. The only things like it is the taste. I mean, I guess I could eat a comic book if I really wanted to, but it's one of those things where I think going all quote-unquote digital is a tremendous mistake. You take away quite a bit of the human experience with it, where you can literally say that because of technological advance, certain companies are devaluing the human experience of ownership, the sensory input, the actual saying, this is mine. I hold it in my hand. It belongs to me. That is so important with products. Now, I'm not saying that you can't have digital copies. Companies shouldn't sell digital copies. I mean, if EA wants to do a digital, have digital downloads of all the Madden football games, so be it. I mean, hey, but put the hard copy out there of the new one. You know, they can say, okay, we're only going to print this game out for, or we're going to release 2 million copies of this game. After that, we're not making any more of it. That's it. That's the end of it. Or we're only going to make a million copies. If you don't have it, you're going to have to download it from us. They can do the same with comic books. I'm only going to print 10,000 copies of this book. After that, you're going to have to get it online. That does two things. It creates a market for it. It creates demand. You know, for that, to get the actual copy in your hand, it creates a false collector's market because people will start actually paying more money to buy an unopened game or a certain comic book to complete the collections. You know, that's, to me, that would be damn smart. Damn good business move on their part to sit there and say, okay, we're going to only print out X amount of these books and go from there. But they don't. They're going to go with all digital. And personally, I think, really it's going to hurt the comic book company more than it will the gaming company. I think it will hurt EA more than anything because EA has a really bad reputation with their customers. A lot of people, they got voted the worst company in America. There's a reason for it. Moves like this, I'm not talking about Mass Effect. Origins, they refuse to admit there's a problem there. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of people that do not trust EA. They buy up these companies and they literally destroy them. I mean, the EA has made a tremendous amount of blunders in their time, and these companies, these little small gaming companies they buy, put up fantastic games. But as soon as they go to EA, they get this, oh, you gotta get it out on a certain date. Well, it's not ready yet. This is not the quality. We need to get that money out, get those money from those consumers. No, you get more money by putting out a high quality product. You get established as a high quality gaming company, and people will flock to you. You'll sell more games that way. Same with comic books. You put a high quality book, a high quality product, regardless if it's games or comic books or anything else, people will show up. The problem is, a lot of major companies aren't doing that. They're going with gimmicks, shock value, rushing to work out. Maybe it's time to, you know what? Just work hard and let's not do events. Let's not try to rush these games out. Let's not try to do controversial storylines in comic books. Let's just tell a story. Let's just try to tell the best story we can. I'm going to get out of your way, Mr. Writer. I'm your editor. Let me know if you're done. I just want to proofread, make sure no out-character experiences going on. Or we don't want to have Superman going lasering half of Metropolis here, but let's go write your story. I'm not going to hinder you one damn bit. I'm just getting out of your way. I'm just here to correct your spelling errors. I really think that's kind of what's going on with both sets. We have, in the gaming industry, we have like companies like EA telling BioWare to get that game out as fast as they can so they can reap the benefits. If they were smart, they would wait until December and have it come out, or November and have it come out right before Christmas, create a Christmas present frenzy. No, they didn't do that. That would create a really big story headline. Now it's given plenty of time to tweak that game, which still needs to be tweaked. And with comic books, they just need to get the hell out of the writer's way. I mean, a writer can't sit there and say it's the editor's fault or anything. The editor's saying, I'm just sitting over here. I just checked the spelling. It's his story. It's his colossal mess. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Fire his ass. What, I'm fired? Screw you, Quesada. And you too, Dan DiDio. Anyway, that was Face the Comic Book Nation with a little touch of video games in there. As you can see, I put out Brain Talking Points, and I'm putting out Face the Comic Book Nation. I still have this internet connection. If for whatever reason, I have sent messages off to Zach and Thomas. Hopefully, they'll get back with me soon. Hopefully, I can get a Geek Entertainment out this week. I really do want to talk about the Avengers movie. Explain my feelings on the Amazing Spider-Man movie, and so on and so forth. I really want to hear their takes on it, and want to get that all out there before the next big one is the Batman Dark Knight Rising, like Pillsbury Doughboy. Alright, take care. God bless. Read a good comic and play a video game that you enjoy, or just curl up and read a good book. Take care. God bless, and catch you next time.
the parts are